Okay, we are going to try to finish up here and talk about a few things about the fourth beast, and time permitting, we'll get to verses 9 through 13 also and talk about the judgment. This is what I wanted to show you a bit earlier. Notice the three sections that the Pope then began to wear on the headpiece. And it denotes when these three horns were plucked up by the roots. Now, remember, we made reference in the last class that there is a connection in verse 25 of Daniel 7 to the time period that the saints are worn out, to the time period that there is a thinking to change times and laws, that there is a relationship to these things, to the time, times, and a dividing of time. Okay? In verse 25, when we look at the word laws, the Hebrew word doth refers to a decree, and we would suggest that that is exactly what the papacy has attempted to do throughout the years. It is thought to change the very decrees of Yahweh into something they are not. So when we look at Revelation 13, verse 5, we are told there that it is a 42-month period in which the career of this little horn would be to do these things. Daniel speaks of it as a time, times, and a half. Now, 42 months, the reason why I wanted to focus on that for some of the young people is it's easy. We can take 42 months of lunar days and 30 days in a month, we can see how the math works out very easy to 1,260 years. When we look at Daniel and the times, times and a half, we would say then that one time is 360, two times would be 720, and then the half of time of 180 will add up then to 1,260. Now there are some very notable periods. They're not insignificant that we can equate to this 1,260-year period of the 42 months of the times, times, and a half. And Brother Thomas, in Elpis Israel and in Exposition of Daniel, referred to these times. And those of you that have the Logos version of Elpis Israel are familiar with the parallelogram that Brother Thomas refers to these dates in there. And, of course, he then gave suggestions of the 1,260-year period from Justinian's decree of the universal bishop to the French Revolution. Then Phocas's decree in 608-610 of the Pope as head of all the churches to Pius's imprisonment, getting us to a period of 1870. Very notable periods. Now, for those of you that are copying this down, I'm going to move this. Daniel will help you with these periods. Elpis Israel, but the Green Book, the Expositor series, has a series of more dates than this that are very good, and you can copy those dates down there because I'm trying to move along. There's one thing that I want to focus on here, okay, about this period that I think is very important, okay, and understand I'm about ready to go a little bit different direction, but I wanted to make sure that I said those are notable periods. But notice in Daniel 7 that when we're dealing with this career of the little horn to wear out the saints, it is very clearly defined that the period ends when the Ancient of Days comes. All right? Daniel 7, verse 20, 21, 22. Just look at those since we haven't time to really review those verses. And the ten horns that were in his head, and of the other which came up, and before whom three fell, even of that horn that had eyes and a mouth that spake very great things, whose look was more stout than his fellows, I beheld, and the same horn made war with the saints and prevailed against them until the Ancient of Days came. All right? Now, since time is going to run out on me and I'm not going to be able to read what I wanted to about the Ancient of Days from Exposition of Daniel, I'll only look at a portion of it. But Brother Thomas in Exposition of Daniel, I think it's pages 16 through 18, at least in my volume, does an excellent rundown on the Ancient of Days and how it relates to, in this prophecy to Christ and also to Yahweh. All right, and we're, for sake of time, we're just going to focus on how it relates to Christ. Now, this is from Exposition of Daniel, and this is something that is very important that I want to focus on. Page 18 in my volume, which is the hardback edition. Look at what Brother Thomas says here. Now, take your time and read this on your own, because what I've got up here is only a part of the quote. Okay? It's only a portion of the quote. And admittedly, I am choosing the portion of the quote that fits the direction that I'm heading. I tell you that because I do not want to in any way appear to misrepresent Brother Thomas's complete thought. Okay? So I want you to know I'm taking a specific portion of the quote of something he said that I think we need to make note of with this 1260. And here's what he says. But at what time does he appear? This is found by attending to what is said concerning the little horn power and the holy ones. It is to prevail against them until the Ancient of Days come, which until is indicated in the words, the holy one shall be given into his power until a time and times and the dividing of time. Hence the Ancient of Days, and this is very important, the Ancient of Days will come at the end of this period, which has not yet expired. For if it had, the Ancient of Days would now be in Teman, or the south of the Holy Land. The Holy Ones would now be preparing to execute judgment, and the season of time would be at hand. Now what I'm telling you, and what I'm really pointing out here, is Brother Thomas was firm in his conviction, and I'm firm in my conviction on this, that the times, times and a half would terminate with the Ancient of Days' arrival to execute judgment. Okay? Now, remember Brother Richard put up that chart yesterday from the book Unsealed and showed the dates that Brother Thomas applied to that. Well, I believe Brother Thomas's conviction was extremely firm that the time periods would end with the return of the Ancient of Days. And so I think that's the focus of his mind when he went to then apply history and important dates to that event. What was more important to his mind was that the time period would end with the arrival of the Ancient of Days. I think the dates that he suggests are notable dates, but he did not live to see that the notable dates, and I say notable because I'm trying to say how strongly how important those dates were and encouraging on them. They should not be minimized whatsoever, okay? But he did not live to see that the ending of that time period from Focus to 1870 did not terminate with the Ancient of Days arrival in Teman or the south of the Holy Land in the preparation to execute judgment. So, I want to put forth a suggestion here for you. And this suggestion is made with the utmost respect for Brother Thomas's writings on the subject, and I'm not trying to minimize his thoughts, but I would suggest to you that when we then examine this times, times and a half, the 42-month period, that it does end. It does terminate with a time period. It does terminate when the little horn power will no longer be able to wear out the saints of the Most High. And so when does that come to pass? And that's what I want to make a suggestion on. Now, the reason I focus on three things in here, there's the great blasphemous words that are spoken during this period, okay, physical persecution and mental, is because we live in an age where the physical persecution is not happening. But we are mentally afflicted. God is still blasphemed. And there's a point in time where those things will no longer be tolerated. Now, in earlier classes, I specifically stressed that there is a notable historical event within the prophecy. Okay? Now, as I say this, I want to make you aware. The reason why I chose the portion of the quote I did from Exposition of Daniel, because the last portion that I did not show on there, for those of you that have the books open, and I want you to read it, okay? Because I want you to not I don't want anybody to think I'm twisting what Brother Thomas is saying, okay? Because the last thing he says then, to find the termination of these epics, we have to look outside of Daniel 7, basically, okay? Well, I'm going to give you a suggestion that does look in Daniel 7 that I think is worthy of our consideration. And that is the notable historical event of the plucking up of the three horns by the roots by Pepin and the creation of the papal states. Now remember, we said that Langer, in his book of world history, placed that in 756 A.D. Gibbon placed it in 758. So I'm going to split the difference and call it 757. We had 1260 years then to 757 when the little horn rose up and plucked up the other three horns, and then Daniel describes him as having this mouth that does these great persecutions and blasphemies. 1260 years brings us to 2017. All right? Now, I stressed that one of the things that is said here is that wherever this date ends, it ends when the great words of blasphemy are no longer tolerated, are no longer put forth without consequence. It is my suggestion that if this date is correct, that once we get to 2017, there will no longer be any repercussion for what the little horn does. That 1217 may very well be the time in which the warfare goes forth back to the papacy and begins the 1 hour with the beast period. And then the papacy will be punished for what it has done and said. And double will be rendered unto her. Okay? If that suggestion is correct, then we would expect that prior to 2017, and let's go to Revelation 14 to make my point, that prior to 2017, there will be a period, that there will be a period in which an alternative is given to the peoples of this earth. Will you accept these words that the little horn speaks, that blasphemes God, that wears out and mentally afflicts his saints, or will you go in a different direction? Revelation 14 and verse 6 says, "And I saw another angel fly in the midst of heaven, having the everlasting gospel to preach unto them that dwell on the earth, and to every nation and kindred and tongue and people, saying with a loud voice, Fear God and give glory to Him, for the hour of His judgment is come. The hour of His judgment is come, and worship Him that made heaven and earth and the sea and all the fountains of the waters. And there followed another angel saying, Babylon is fallen. So ultimately what I'm suggesting to you, we know that there will be an everlasting gospel proclamation period. Brother Thomas in Eureka suggests that that period will be 10 years after the type of the blowing of the trumpets on the first day of the seventh month to the Day of Atonement 10 days later. Read what he has in Eureka on that, and he relates that to the everlasting gospel sound. The trumpet blast is the glorious sound of the gospel that goes forth to all the nations. Unfortunately, the little horn will contradict that claim. But at the end of that 10-year everlasting gospel proclamation, the repercussions for what he has done and what the nations have done begins. So my suggestion would be that we have 10 years to take off 2017 for that everlasting gospel proclamation period, which is 2007, not too far around the corner, which is 40 years from 67, and might then answer to the parable of the fig tree, and a generation since Jerusalem was no longer a divided city in the nation of Israel, but came under the control of the nation of Israel. Now, the reason I've put forth this suggestion and let me just say this as plainly as I can and make my point clear and make everyone understand what I'm feeling here. I mean, I've obviously gone to a date that Brother Thomas didn't suggest here, and I did so because Brother Thomas was clear that his belief was that that date would terminate at the arrival of the Ancient of Days. And I believe his belief on that was firm, that he believed that time period would end with the Ancient of Days in Teman, or preparing to execute judgment. And I think that that is the solid belief that Brother Thomas presents to us here that we must hang on to. And then I believe that the dates that he suggested are certainly extremely notable periods. They gave great hope to the saints. They gave them something to look for and to be encouraged by. And we have a time period that may be coming to an end now for us, to where we will no longer have to deal with the great words that are spoken by the papacy, which cause us great mental torment at this time. Well, let's go back to Daniel chapter 7 now. And in the time that we have remaining in this class, let's take a critical look, or as much detail as we can in time, at verses 9 through 14. Alright, verses 9 through 14. The chapter is broken up in chapter 7 because we have the angel giving additional information that Daniel wanted that exact knowledge on. So when we really pick up at verse 9, some of what has been told to us in verses 17 through 21 have happened. Alright, we're trying to piece the chapter together. Some of what we read then after verse 22, because verse 22 is referring us to the Ancient of Days and judgment. After verse 22, verse 23 is going to relate to verse 8 and beyond. Okay? But now when we get back to chapter 7 and verse 9, the very notable event, and that is the judgment being poured out by the Ancient of Days upon the fourth beast. Verse 9 says, I beheld till the thrones were, and I'm going to alter the King James here, set or placed. And the Ancient of Days did sit, whose garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head like the pure wool. His throne was like the fiery flame, and his wheels as burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. Thousands ministered unto him, and 10,000s times 10,000s stood before him. The judgment was set. This is equivalent to what we just read up in verse 9. The thrones were set. The judgment was set, and the books were opened. I beheld then, because of the voice of the great words which the horn spake, I beheld even till the beast was slain, and his body destroyed, and given to the burning flame. As concerning the rest of the beasts, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man came with the clouds of heaven, and came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. And there was given him dominion and glory, in a kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed. So verse 9 then brings us to a judgment seat in a time of judgment. Now, it is very important that we understand that what we read in verses 9 through 14, alright, or specifically in verse 9 through through 12, does not relate to the judgment of the saints. What we are seeing here is a depiction of national judgment. That is very critical that we understand that. What Daniel saw was the career and the development of the fourth beast, and its little horn, and then the judgment that would be poured out upon that beast. So in verse 9, when we see the thrones are set or placed for judgment to come, these thrones are being set for the purpose of judging the nations. The throne that is set is the thronos that is set in Zion. It is the throne of David reestablished in Jerusalem. It is the throne upon which the Ancient of Days in the form of Jesus the Christ sits upon this earth judging the nations. It is the throne from which the four beast systems and the fourth beast will be judged. And on the contrary side, it is the throne before four living creatures of the apocalypse, the saints, will sit singing, "Worthy is the Lamb," and glory and honor unto Him. It is significant that in what time we have left as we go through these verses, that we see thoughts and concepts portrayed that clearly equate to the concepts of the cherubim and the judgment that they pour forth. We see concepts that clearly relate to the judgments of the nations being put forth. All right, let's look at a few references here and a few thoughts. Back to a few references on the thrones being set or placed. Rotherham says placed. The Revised Version has placed instead of cast down. National judgment being referred to. Let's look at Psalm chapter 9, verses 7 and 8. Psalm 9, 7 and 8. But Yahweh shall endure forever. He hath prepared His throne for judgment. And He shall judge the world in righteousness. He shall minister judgment to the people in uprightness. Let's go from Psalm 9 to Psalm 122 in the fifth verse. And in all of these verses we're going to read here out of the Psalms, we are going to see words that relate to the judgment that will come forth when Christ rules the earth, when He will rule over the nations with His rod of iron. Psalm 122, in the fifth verse, "For there are set thrones of judgment, the thrones of the house of David. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. They shall prosper that love Thee. Peace be within Thy walls and prosperity within Thy palaces." And I think it's interesting. We like to focus on those last words that I read. They're one of our wonderful hymns that have been compiled for us. But notice that this time of peace for Jerusalem that has come and peace within the palaces and walls is as a result because the throne of David, the throne of judgment, is set, which rules the nations righteously. And that's the reason why there will be peace and prosperity, because those nations will have been judged nationally. The rule of Yahweh will go out through all the earth. One more reference in Psalms on this point. Psalms 149 in the ninth verse. For context, verse 7. "To execute vengeance upon the nations and punishments upon the people, to bind their kings with chains and their nobles with fetters of irons, to execute upon them the judgment written, this honor have all His saints. Praise ye Yahweh." Now that's just a snippet of three verses that speak of the judgment that the saints and Christ will have in the earth. And that's what we're seeing here in Daniel 7 when we see the throne of judgment set. It has nothing to do with the Bema. It has nothing to do when the books are opened here, the judgment seat of the saints. These are national books of judgment that are portrayed here, because the end result of these verses in this judgment is the destruction of the body of the fourth beast. All right? Now let's look at the description of Him that is set upon the throne, because it is a wonderful description of hope, and it is a time that we yearn for, look forward to. The Ancient of Days sits. His garment is white as snow. And this is a tremendous description that is given to us about the Ancient of Days. We might think of this as a description of the multitudinous Christ. And I say that with a qualification, because we want to make sure we understand that when we're describing the Ancient of Days, you know, it is used here in this chapter of Yahweh. It's certainly used of Yeshua here. Okay? But let's focus on this also, the idea that, you know, the saints are His. They will act as His ministers as well. I'm not trying to say, the saints are necessarily the Ancient of Days, because they haven't had any beginning or end, but just as Christ sits as the Ancient of Days representative, we're going to have the glory to take part in that. A small part. Let's read some references on the fact that His garment will be as white as snow. Let's start with Daniel chapter 12 in the 10th verse. Daniel chapter 12 verse 10, many shall be purified and made white and tried, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. Well, Daniel sees a time here that many shall be purified and made white. Certainly, when we think of Christ as the Ancient of Days, His garment is pure. It is white as snow. The hair of His head is also like pure wool. I'm getting ahead of myself because of the time, but along with Daniel 12:10 on the garment of white as snow, make a note of Revelation 19:8. That's a familiar verse to us, speaking of the garment of whiteness of the bride. You know, those are two references that focus on the saints, but, you know, we certainly see the relationship to their head, okay, in that regard. And when I say their head, I'm talking about Christ as their head. We also have His hair being like pure wool. And I think this is an apt description of Christ, and I want to try to focus our attention here on Christ, and that's why I qualified my words on the saints there. Because isn't it a wonderful description, since we're seeing Christ here as the Ancient of Days, a wonderful description that His hair is described as pure wool. You know, where is our hair? Our hair is on our head. All right, I'm not saying anything surprising, right? It surrounds our brain. So what I would say that when we think of a head, that its hair is like pure white wool, what is enclosed within it is untainted. Its thoughts, its actions, its directions are pure. So we're speaking of an individual whose mind is pure when we think of that hair being like pure wool. The mind has been purified. And that certainly is something that we can think of in relationship to Yeshua. He overcame the flesh. His thoughts were pure. His thoughts were right with His Father. His actions and thoughts were sinless. Let's look at Revelation chapter 1. Verses 13 and 14. And in the midst of the seven candlesticks, one like unto the Son of Man, clothed with a garment down to the foot, and girt about the paps with a golden girdle. His head and His hairs were white like wool, as white as snow, and His eyes were as a flame of fire. Here we see John describing this characteristic as the Son of Man. So we see that connection with the Ancient of Days and the Son of Man. Not only was He sinless in His first advent, and His thoughts were purified, but because of His victory over the flesh, and always winning that battle, when He comes then as the Ancient of Days, it is without that conflict within His mind. That's gone. That was gone for Him after His resurrection. And therefore, He is aptly described as having hair like pure wool. It's also very important that we notice that we are focusing on these symbols of righteousness with the Ancient of Days, that this is a national time of judgment. for the next thing that comes forth is the description of the throne being like a fiery flame in wheels of burning fire. And I think the reason why these two thoughts are combined together, look, Daniel could have just seen a throne, and it could have just said the person that is sitting upon this throne, the personage just goes forth for judgment. But he has given symbols that tell us why this individual has been granted that right to sit upon the throne as well. Because he is one that has conquered the flesh, one that has been purified from of it, and those that are with him, you know, have also been made white at this time. But he has conquered flesh, and therefore he is worthy to sit upon that throne. His garment is white as snow. The things of, he did nothing to defile in actions and in personal sin, which he had none. He did nothing to defile his garment. He did nothing that his hair would be anything other than described as white. And therefore he has the right from his throne that a fiery flame would go forth, and that his wheels would be as burning fire. In these descriptions and in the descriptions that follow in verse 10, we are clearly shown a depiction of the cherubim and their work in judging the nations. This won't be the beginning of the cherubim's career. We would say that they've already been operated when they left Teman and moved to establish that throne. But now Daniel will see that cherubic manifestation going forth from the throne that is set in Zion. So then, when we think about the fiery flame, let's look at a few references that we want to take note of. Primarily, let's think about the Apocalypse in the fourth chapter and what is said there, because the throne that is seen is the same. It is a throne of which judgment comes forth. My mind is really busy right now trying to figure out what I'm not going to talk about. So I think I need to just try to give up the battle in my mind on what I am and not going to talk about and focus on a few things here. And so I want to read the whole chapter here because it approaches the time frame. And hopefully in our personal studies we'll be able to pick out a little bit more of the details, because I'm listening to the words coming out of my mouth, and I'm afraid that while I'm thinking about what I'm not going to talk about, something might come out that I phrase wrong. So I need to slow down. And let's read this chapter 4, and let's think of it as a description of what we're seeing in Daniel 7, 9 through 12. After this I looked, and behold, a door was opened in heaven. And the first voice which I heard was as it were of a trumpet talking with me, which said, Come up hither, and I will show thee things which must be hereafter. And immediately I was in the spirit, and behold, a throne was set in heaven, and one sat on the throne. And see that in your mind's eye, how similar this is to what Daniel is seeing and what he is saying. A throne was set in heaven. Daniel said the throne for the Ancient of Days was placed. Okay? Sat was to look upon like a jasper and a sardine stone. And there was a rainbow round about the throne in sight like unto an emerald. And round about the throne were 24 seats. And upon the seats I saw 24 elders sitting, clothed in white raiment. And they had on their heads crowns of gold. Now pause for just a moment. And that's why I wanted to try to envision our participation in that throne of the Ancient of Days, because we see them described here as the 24 elders, and the description of being clothed upon with white raiment is appropriate. They are clothed in white raiment because that clothing is an extension of their masters. It has been granted unto him because he has found them worthy of it. All right? Let's continue in our reading. And out of the throne proceeded lightnings and thunders and voices, and there were 7 lamps of fire burning before the throne, which are the 7 spirits of God. And before the throne there was a sea of glass like unto crystal. And in the midst of the throne and round about the throne were 4 living creatures full of eyes before and behind. And I'm going to pause for just a second. Isn't then what we're seeing in chapter 4 a wonderful contrast to the little horn? The little horn has his 4 beasts, if you will. And they're beasts because they're terrible, they're dreadful. You know, all they seek to do is to devour and do things that are of the flesh. In the Apocalypse, there it says four beasts in the King James, but it's four living creatures. You know, these are great beasts themselves. And they are beasts that will assist in destruction. But look at how the description is here. They are beasts of glory. They are not fleshly. They're living creatures, as Brother Thomas refers to them. So it's a great contrast. Before one throne, the throne of the horn, we have four devouring beasts. Before the glorious throne of the Ancient of Days, we have four righteous beasts, or living creatures, doing that which is the will of the Father. Verse 7, the first beast was like a lion. The second, like a calf. The third beast had the face of a man. And the fourth beast was like a flying eagle. You know, and even those in themselves are contrast to what Daniel said. Some of the symbols are the same, but yet they're not. And they're not the same because these now are symbols that are used for righteousness and true righteousness. You know, when we think about the papacy, who has this great lion mouth with iron teeth, he fancies himself to be speaking words of righteousness, but he's not. So that lion is going to be replaced. You know, the false lion, if you will be done away with and replaced with the true lion, the lion of the tribe of Judah and those that are his. And so I think it's interesting that some of the symbols here are similar. They're not all the same. It's not a complete correlation, but we have then that fourth that is mentioned here, which is like the eagle. You know, when we think then about the military arm of that ecclesiastical power described as the eagle and the fourth beast, you know, they think they're working for that which is good and right. But they're really not the true eagle. The true eagle of righteousness. They don't really reflect that true animal that can look and gaze into the eyes of the sun, as the eagle is the only animal that can gaze into the eyes of the sun. So it's interesting the contrast in chapter 4, and I don't have the time to give it that I wanted to, but it's something I just want to make a few comments for you to think about, the wonderful contrast that is here. Verse 8, the four living creatures had each of them six wings about him. This shows that they were once of mortal flesh. Okay? Once of mortal flesh. And they were full of eyes within, and they rest not day and night. This describes that they are no longer flesh. They once were, but now they no longer require the rest of the flesh. They go forth and constantly are doing the work of Yahweh. They are no longer mortal. They are immortal. They have no need of rest day or night. They say, "Holy, holy, Lord God Almighty, which was and is to come." And when those beasts give glory and honor and thanks to Him that sat on the throne, who liveth forever and ever, the 24 elders fall down before Him that sat on the throne and worship Him that liveth forever and ever, and cast their crowns before the throne, saying, "Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for Thou hast created all things, and for Thy pleasure they are and were created." Isn't it an interesting contrast as well? That when we consider what Daniel and John saw together, he saw a great beast that had no desire to give their crowns up. You know, the Pope loved their crown so much, he wore a tripart crown. But these individuals that stand before the true God of the earth, and not that false God of the earth, as Phocas called the Bishop of Rome, the God of the earth, falsely, they cast their crowns before the throne. We know where true honor and glory comes from. We are not fleshly in our pursuits for our own elevation, for our own glory. We pursue the glory of Yahweh. Having read then chapter 4, we want to focus for a moment on verse 10 of chapter 7 and think about what Daniel saw there. He saw this fiery flame that went forth from the throne. He saw the wheels of the burning fire, the fiery stream. One of the references that I was going to try to make reference to that I just simply don't have time to think about, 2 Thessalonians 1, 7 and 8, which speaks about, you know, the going forth to judgment by Yahweh's ministering spirits taking vengeance on them that know not God, that have ignored the everlasting gospel proclamation. That might not be the only way we would apply 2 Thessalonians 1, 7, and 8. I'm not limiting it out, but I think there's an element there. But Daniel then sees before this throne thousands and thousands ministering unto him, 10,000s times 10,000 standing before him when these national judgment books are set. And verse 10 is confirming for us, okay, brethren, that this is nothing to do with the judgment seat of the saints. Because the saints are there and present with the Ancient of Days when these books are open, judgment given to the fourth beast. And that's why we do not want to confuse the judgment seat that we see here. This is a wonderful description, these thousands, thousands, these 10,000s times 10,000s that sit in this judgment, that stand before the throne. They are standing because they are prepared to do whatever Yahweh commands. All right, the 10,000 stand. They stand because they are ready for Yahweh to say, this fourth beast needs to be destroyed and burned up. They're prepared to do His work. They just await His word. Because they are the wise that shine forth, they know what His word is going to be already. But they wait for His word and they wait to carry it out. Let's look at Deuteronomy chapter 33. And let's look at Moses' description of this great body of immortal saints. Deuteronomy 33 is another one of those chapters which our young Bible students need to spend some time in. It is prophetic. All right, verse 2 seems to be written in the past tense. But I want you to read what Brother Thomas says about this in Eureka, that this is not past tense, this is prophetic word that is being spoken here by Moses. So we look then at Deuteronomy 33 and verse 2. And he said, Yahweh shall go forth from Sinai and rise up from Seir unto them. He shined forth from Mount Paran, and he came with 10,000s of saints. From his right hand went a fiery law for them. What Daniel saw was nothing new. Moses had already seen it. Daniel was given additional information. And this is another one of those strong cases for you why I want you to consider that when Daniel went and said, I want to know the truth of what I've seen, it wasn't because he didn't understand anything he saw. Because then we would have to assume that Daniel didn't know what Moses said, that he didn't know anything about what Moses had already revealed. And I don't think we would say that about Daniel. We would say he was a man of understanding. He wanted complete and full understanding, and that's what we need to be. And that's why I love the poem that we so often hear by our elders, Dare to be a Daniel. Deb's grandmother loved that poem, and it just hit me, so sorry. You know, we need to be like him, and we want that complete understanding. And we want to be part of this 10,000s that Moses says he saw going forth to execute this judgment. Psalm 68, verse 17. Let's turn there. The chariots of God are 20,000, even thousands of angels. Yahweh is among them, as in Sinai, in the holy place. Now, when we read through all of the 68th chapter, we certainly see that it is depicting a second Exodus. And so I wanted to reference this verse because I think it helps us to relate to these thousands, thousands, 10,000s times 10,000s, which stand before the Ancient of Days. They are the cherubic manifestation. They are the multitudinous body. They are the chariots of God. And let's remember that when we read of the chariots of God, we know that there's a relationship between the chariots of God and the cherubim of God, because the cherubim of Yahweh are that which the psalmist says upon which the God of heaven rides, as in a chariot. One more reference, Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 22. Right now, as we read this reference, remember that Daniel sees these thousands and thousands standing up, ready to go forth with judgment, with this fiery stream that is issuing from the throne. And then Hebrews 12 and 22. Well, let me look at my note again here. Hebrews 12, 22. That's the verse that I did want. But ye are come unto Mount Zion, and unto the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to an innumerable company of angels. So Paul then, as he writes this, does he not think of what Daniel saw on the thousands and thousands that were standing before the throne of the Ancient of Days? Without question, that's what he understood. And I want to just bring our thoughts to a close here. And let's think about the judgments then that will go forth. And let's be mindful of our hope. We live in a time of great wickedness. We live in a time where the truth is in great trouble. We need to each of us be like Daniel and yearn for this great time to arrive. You know, Daniel ended this vision in verse 28 in a little bit of grief. He was in a bit of grief because he knew a lot more time had to come for these great events to take place. Well, I think we're all convinced that we don't have to suffer from Daniel's grief in that regard, because we know the time is arriving. And my personal conviction, which I don't know that I'm right, is that, you know, it's just around the corner. You know, with inside of, you know, days to a year. Who knows? I'm just putting out a thought there. But we need to live our lives certainly with that expectation that the time has arrived. I don't have any time to deal with the destruction of the fourth beast and his life being prolonged for a season at a time. And rather, to finish this up with a great summation, let me just give you a thought here, particularly for the young Bible students. When you see in verse 12 that season and a time that there will be life prolonged for, just know that in Revelation 20 in verse 4 that John gives us the answer to that time period. Brother Thomas says that it is a 1,000-year period. And then read exposition of Daniel and you'll see how Brother Thomas arrives with the season and a time being that 1,000-year period. And then I think what I'd like do is look at Isaiah 60 and verse 12 with this conversation, and we'll bring our thoughts to a close, because we are out of time and I'm out of voice. Isaiah 60 and verse 12 says, "For the nation and kingdom that will not serve thee shall perish. Yea, those nations shall be utterly wasted." You know, and that should be something that we look forward to participating in, because it will be a great honor and a great joy. The grief of mind that we have endured from the apostasy is coming to a close, and we need to make sure that we are prepared for that time.